This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with producer Dave.
And Updog.
Updog. And today, we're going to be kicking off our coverage of season two of the Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian, with a little review of what happened in season one to catch us all back up to speed. And I just finished my rewatch not 1 hour ago, and I forgot how much I loved this show. My gosh, it aged like a fine wine between the first watch and the second watch for me personally.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see that there is a huge fandom for The Mandalorian. Like, I see all these like Twitter accounts tweeting out about it, and you know, they have like tens of thousands of likes, which is like absolutely crazy to see. And obviously, you know, Disney is going to appeal to that audience. So,
yeah, I mean, Star Wars has such a massive fandom, but even more so, I feel like The Mandalorian is even more mainstream than Star Wars as a whole. I know people like my mom, who is like a fair weather Star Wars fan, loves The Mandalorian. So, you know,
and another thing is like, I feel like as like the fandom, you know, has maybe been disappointed in the movies for the most part, I would say, based on reactions I see online, but The Mandalorian has always been a consistent A plus from everybody.
100%. And we have seen that Disney is capable of putting out some stellar Star Wars content with, oh my gosh, I'm Rogue One, across the board, universal praise. I feel like even old head Star Wars fans.
My dad loved that.
My dad, case in point, says, Rogue One is probably one of the best Star Wars movies, period.
Yep.
You know, the old heads get nostalgic for the original trilogy, but I consider Rogue One probably my second or third favorite movie behind New Hope and Return of the Jedi. Or I'm sorry, New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
I was going to say Empire Strikes Back, but yeah, Rogue One slips right into there, which is awesome.
So that's what I'm saying. You know, Disney is capable of putting out really good Star Wars content. I think you and I agree that we weren't too crazy about their movies, but I have very high hopes for this show. Season one did not let us down, and season two, high hopes. Like I said, very high hopes.
Season two is going to bring in not only the season one of Mandalorian together, but it's also going to start bringing in together things from like Clone Wars and all these like side shows that I personally haven't seen, but that's why we have our expert Brian here on the mic.
Quote unquote expert, a relative expert, because there are some people that know every single little piece of Star Wars literature that there is to have. I think I'll do a good job for the purposes of this podcast. But people forget, because a lot of people only watch the movies, that the scope of this story is the entire galaxy. And there's an infinite number of planets and star systems, and the possibilities are unlimited, and there's this really rich lore, and like the Mandalorian religion itself, there's so much lore behind it that the movies don't really have time to explore, because they just have to focus on the Skywalker story, because that is the overarching story, the most important thing happening in the galaxy. But a TV show like this has an opportunity to really explore kind of the lesser known stories that are out there. And they're doing a really good job already of making it all tie together. So I'm just so excited.
That was a great way to put it. Yeah, I honestly think that was a great way to summarize that.
Yeah. But there's a lot of questions that we have at the end of season one. And I think the best way to kind of get into it is to just start breaking down the characters, where we left them at the end of season one, what they had done throughout the first 8 episodes, and what their motivations might be going forward. So let's get it going with our boy Mando, the Mandalorian Din Djarin. So what is his deal? He is a Mandalorian bounty hunter who has kind of been alienated from the Bounty Hunters Guild at this point. Well, it's a little bit more complicated.
I want to say it kind of started with him starting to do business with the Imperials, I guess you would call them. Because the Mandalorians have a history of battling with the Imperials. So when he goes to someone like the client to do business with them, his own people kind of.
So I don't think Mando sought out to do business with the Imperials. He, when the story begins, episode one, he is a part of the Bounty Hunters Guild, which is
Yeah,
so he is kind of just going by the rules laid out by the guild. And the head of this guild faction we meet very early on is a man named Greef Karga, who is a familiar face. It's the actor Carl Weather, which I thought appeals to a lot of that older nostalgia. Yep. You know, people like getting wrapped up in that. But I thought it was great casting. He killed the part. He had the perfect amount of like Star Wars cheesiness.
Yeah.
I think he did a really good job because that's kind of Star Wars appeal.
They
you know?
Wanted to do that. Like even when you see him at the like the bars and the taverns and stuff, like it has that old Star Wars feel that, you know, is meant to be that way.
It seems like in the new movies that it was forced at times. And I hated that because you can tell that they were trying too hard to do it. But it seems natural in this show. Yep. And it's really refreshing. Though I digress. So the Mandalorian gets wrapped up with the Empire through the Bounty Hunters Guild. His first mission that we see, or I guess the second, because the story picks up, he's on a mission. Mm-hmm. Greef Karga assigns him what we find out to be the mission of retrieving this mysterious asset, who is revealed at the episode or at the end of episode one to be the child, Baby Yoda,
the one and only, who blew up the internet worldwide.
Yeah, it's still destroyed right now, Baby Yoda, and it's coming back. The internet's not ready for Baby Yoda. No. He is the only thing that can save us from the darkness of this pandemic. He has all of our hearts. We love Baby Yoda with all of our hearts.
He's going to get us through this pandemic.
Absolutely. But Mando retrieves the asset in a great episode. That episode one starts off hot with the gunfight between IG-1 and the Mandalorian and the Imperial. Well, they were more just thugs. I don't think he was rescuing Baby Yoda from the Empire. I think they were more just thugs at a hideout.
Right.
But that was a great gunfight in episode one. And episode two, we find him returning the asset to this mysterious client. And his only name that he's referred to as is the client. And this is where the Empire starts to tie in. But it is against the code of the guild to ask any questions. So Mando is still in the dark as to what the Empire wants with this Baby Yoda. And he feels a little fishy about it.
But he is eventually paid for his duty in what is known as Beskar, correct?
Beskar steel. And that
is a very rare metal, I guess.
It's a Mandalorian thing. It's essentially, think Valyrian steel in Game of Thrones. It is just superior in quality in every imaginable way. It is what the Mandalorians of old fashioned their armor out of. But it is extremely rare and it extremely rare. And what it's alluded to is that the Empire collected a lot of this Beskar from the planet Mandalore during the Great Empirical Purge. The Great Purge. I think it's just called, just which they don't outright say it, but during the times of the Empire, they purged Mandalore as a planet, and they are not on good terms with the Mandalorian people as a whole.
I think it was just because of things like their Beskar. They were seen as a threat because of their fighting skills.
Well, it was also that Mandalore is pretty infamously, they like to remain neutral all through the Clone Wars. They didn't join a side between the Separatists and the Old Republic. So when the Empire finally took over, they were probably looking to snuff out any spark of a rebellion, and Mandalore as a neutral planet not bowing down to the Empire would be a threat, especially, like you said, because they are renowned warriors. So there was a great purge, and they say it a lot. Mandalorians are now very, very rare across the galaxy. Nobody sees them like ever. So our boy Mando is kind of kind of a unique guy.
And he's always the center of attention whenever he walks into a new place. Everyone knows he's a Mandalorian.
Well, especially when he's got that bright new Beskar armor.
Yep. He always every time he upgrades it, he looks so much cleaner.
Yeah. So he immediately, once he returns the asset and gets, by anyone's standards, a lot of Beskar because it's very rare, which is our first indicator that the Empire really, really, really wants Baby Yoda. We don't know why, but if they're willing to pay a king's ransom to acquire this little baby alien thing,
50-year-old baby,
then he's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And to get into Baby Yoda, nobody knows anything about this species other than that they kind of pop up from time to time. Yoda is the most famous. Yoda, I think, had a sister or maybe just someone else from the species called Yaddle or Yaddle. I kind of forget, but the species is very rare. They turn up from time to time. The big factor is pretty much all of them are force sensitive. So yeah, they are all force wielders.
And I was going to ask that question. So Baby Yoda's he's obviously not a Jedi, but it's the Force that I guess the species, like, they just have that, as you said, connection with the Force.
Well, the Jedi is just an order of people. It's almost a religion. It is a religion, actually. So you can be Force sensitive without being a Jedi and vice versa. So right now, yeah, he's just some little baby killing it, pushing things around.
That's one of the things I want to get to in a little bit, I guess. But that's one of the expectations I have, is to get a little more backstory on that whole thing.
About the Jedi and just
like what Baby Yoda really is and why they're so force sensitive.
And just to get into it with a little bit of context, the Jedi are, they're not known around the galaxy. You know, we see what Baby Yoda does and we're like, oh, he has the Force, he's force sensitive. But people don't really remember the Force because some 20 years ago or so, all the Jedi were taken out by Order 66. So for context, this is in the aftermath of the rebellion. So the rebels are trying to establish a new republic in the fallout of the second Death Star being exploded in Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we are. And on this planet Navarro, where the Bounty Hunters Guild is, and it's kind of like our main planet for this show, there's lawlessness and chaos. You know, it's kind of this thing where we all knew that the Empire was bad, but now nobody's really in control. And at least the Empire had things, they were ruling the galaxy, but they had things under control. And now nobody has anything under control. And it's kind of this new republic trying to find its feet.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was a pretty long tangent.
No, it's what the people need. You know, we need that information. We need that backstory. Because some of us, you know, we haven't seen all, like, I love Star Wars, but, you know, I've only seen, you know, the movies. I haven't really gotten any of the side information. So when you talk about it, it's it's the information I need.
So I should say, I think we got a little ahead of ourselves. Episode 3 was where he returns the child to the client.
Regardless, yeah, it's still...
I only wanted to backtrack because episode 2 was where we had that awesome fight between Mando and the Mudhorn,
where it's the first time
that we see Baby Yoda's powers revealed. And we've all, if you're listening right now, I would hope that you've watched season 1. This was a pretty iconic scene. Mando versus the Mudhorn. He gets taken out by this, it's like a rhinoceros on steroids. Trying to get his parts back from the Jawas. I love that the Jawas are still a thing. Just scrapping parts.
Love
it's them. It's the Star Wars nostalgia that the Mandalorian, the show, is doing.
It's just not force. It's just, you know, these people have been around.
Absolutely. But yeah, so Mando gets taken out by this rhinoceros thing, and he kind of puts up his dagger. He's ready to take it head on and just die. When Baby Yoda just lifts this thing up, closes his eyes, looking all cute, and just lifts up the rhino and saves Mando's life.
I would say that and Moff Gideon were by far the two most iconic scenes of the season, without a doubt. Like, those two resonate with me so hard. Mm-hmm.
And I cannot speak enough to how good Disney is doing with all the CGI. I think all of the droids look phenomenal. All of the flora and fauna from all the different planets look incredible.
They've got the
budget. It's awesome.
Yeah, they have the budget,
they got
obviously.
Deep pockets, but they're putting it to good use.
Absolutely.
This show, head to toe, it's just great. The rewatch really got me excited for season 2. I can't today is Friday, by the way. So episode one of season two is already dropped, and we're kind of
resisting the urge
to watch it. Yeah.
Sunday is when we will hopefully record it.
Yes. Episode two is also where we get introduced to Queel. Rips in the chat for Queel.
Rest in peace, man.
We'll get to his death. A legend. Definitely a legend. So moving on, we have episode three. That is kind of where Mando returns to Nevarro, gives the child to the client, and then he backtracks and is like,
he saved my life. He's kind of cute.
Yes.
I actually like him.
He knows that he just turned it over to the Empire, and it's the struggle between he's a part of the Bounty Hunters Guild and I'm not supposed to ask questions. I'm just supposed to do the mission and be on my way. And like you said, this kid saved my life and he's cute and the Empire's probably going to torture him and give him a terrible life.
I still remember like Baby Yoda giving him like that like frown and like that sigh of disappointment when he's just like going away in the room and Mando's just like, I gotta save him.
My favorite parts are when it's just Mando and Baby Yoda in the ship.
Yeah, those are the
and he's
the
just fucking around with buttons and pulling levers and Mando's like, don't touch that.
And then when he's not there anymore and he's like looking around, he's just like, I miss that kind of entertainment, you know? It's awesome.
I love it. Okay, so
he returns Baby Yoda, eventually decides to rescue Yoda from the Empire because of this relationship that he develops. Basically, they manage to escape. However, all of the bounty hunters, we learned that the Empire actually had put out a bounty on Baby Yoda through multiple bounty hunters. So it wasn't just Mando.
Pretty much every bounty hunter, which is our second indicator that Baby Yoda is a big deal and a prized asset in the eyes of the Empire. And we keep referring to them as the Empire. It is the remnants of the Empire. They say a couple times, all that's left is warlords and just kind of the higher ups that have assembled whatever forces that are remaining loyal to the Empire. So it's a broken Empire, but we're going to refer to them as the Empire.
And then basically once Mando takes back Baby Yoda, the Empire sends out a hit on both of them, essentially.
Yes, and he is still on the Bounty Hunter's planet, so he is immediately swarmed by all the Bounty Hunters.
This was a great, awesome shootout. Scene,
Mando's pinned down. It's not looking good for him, and then help comes from above. We see the other Mandalorians from the Mandalorian covert save the day. It's awesome seeing them fight with the jetpacks. It's so cool.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal scene. I love the jetpacks. They're all riding in. They're all just casually strolling up, just shooting everybody with, you know, they're not even looking at half their shots, honestly, and they're hitting them.
So Mando escapes. He shoots Greef Karga, thinks that he kills him, but Greef was actually saved by a piece of Beskar, which was kind of his cut from the whole Baby Yoda thing that was in his front pocket. So Greef is still alive. Mando thinks he's dead. But we'll hear from Greef again. Episode four, we have the introduction of one of our, I feel like there's only two main characters, and it's the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, but I feel like Cara Dune is like number three.
I think she's sealed herself in there in that main character cast, definitely.
Yeah.
She's the third member of the group.
So we have Cara Dune, and she is a former drop trooper for the Rebellion. She's kind of a cool chick, honestly. I like her a lot.
She's a badass. Yeah,
the meeting scene. So the Mandalorian is obviously under some heat. He's trying to, give the Empire the slip, essentially, and he's kind of flying along and is just looking for a planet that he can lay low for a while, and stumbles upon this planet Sorgan, walks into a bar and recognizes Cara Dune. They have this really cool scene where he walks out and they just kind of wrestle for a bit, and
then Cara gets the better of him, I think.
Oh,
right?
Definitely. Yeah, I would say she's a really good hand-to-hand fighter. I wish we had Jimmy here.
Was she ex-Empire or ex-Rebel?
She was a Rebel. She was a drop trooper. Right. Yeah, so we see her backstory. She says that she got a lot of her work following the Battle of Endor, which was the destruction of the second Death Star. And she kind of has been looking for a purpose, it seems like, since the Rebellion. Because
she's just been out of work.
After there was a war, she said that all of the Rebellion troopers kind of turned into a police force. And she said, that's not what I signed up for. So now she's just kind of doing her thing, bouncing around. She says that she's here on this beautifully peaceful planet of Sorgan as like an early retirement. So her and Mando are kind of in the same boat. They're just trying to avoid it all and lay low for a while. So that's Cara Dune. episode 4 is called Sanctuary, and it's both of them wanting to lay low. They stumble upon this. It's almost like an alarmingly peaceful village. Like, this village is so unbelievably peaceful.
It's like something out of, I don't know if you've ever seen The Seven Samurai, but it's just literally, just a peaceful village.
Looks like
in
a
the
rice
middle.
Paddy or
yeah,
something.
Just a rice field. There's just nothing much to it.
But they're getting plagued by these kind of brutes. I guess they're just a very, I don't know what you would call them, like an animalistic tribesman species that
they're basically the Mongolians to the Chinese.
Yeah, they're super strong. They scream a lot, and they just come in and they raid and raid and raid this poor village that doesn't know how to.
But they
defend
do have
themselves.
A secret weapon on their side.
Yes, they do. They have an AT-ST, which are kind of those imperial walkers on two legs. We
not
all know
the
what
camels,
they look like.
Yeah, they're the two-legged
they're not
ones.
The camels. They're the ostriches, I guess you would call it.
Yeah, whatever.
But if you recall what they looked like in the original trilogy, they look really badass in this show.
It was terrifying in that
episode.
A nod
to the CGI, and the brutes kind of painted it with a war paint. So it's kind of like rugged and feral. Mm. And this thing looks like a beast. It has the glowing red eyes and it's taken out trees as it goes. But that's their secret weapon. So this poor village of farmers is completely overwhelmed. We have Mando and Cara Dune as the experienced vets. They kind of train the village up to defend themselves and help them take out the AT-ST. Mm-hmm. This is also where we get another one of our side characters, Amara, and her daughter, Winta, who Amara is the mom, and she kind of has a little bit of chemistry with Mando.
Yeah, there's a little potential love interest here. I'm not ready to ship them yet as a couple. Yeah. There was I don't know if it was just, some side piece for the time being, but
I kind of like her. She's
if she comes back, I'm not going to be upset. But if Mando's moved on, I'm also not going to be upset. Like, he's going to be traveling the galaxy. There's going to be plenty of other women in his room.
I don't think there's a whole lot of reason he would have to go back there. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to see Amara or Winta again. But, who knows?
Maybe at the very end, like when Mando's finally done everything.
Maybe that's where he retires, takes off the helmet.
Because Amara, she was trying to take off the helmet a couple times, I think. And
well, that's
she
the thing.
He stopped him.
He keeps saying, you take off the helmet, you can't put it back on. So I think there's a time in it's either you die or you take off the helmet and you just start being a normal person. Mm-hmm. And the Mandalorian way does not suggest that many Mandalorians
do the taking off the helmet.
Yes, a lot of them probably die before they do it, but I'm sure some choose that route, and he has that choice. He could take it off and he could have the happy life.
No one knows his identity, so it's like if he does take off that helmet, he just becomes your average Joe.
Mm-hmm. And Cara kind of says that. She says, hey man, you're a bounty hunter, but you could just take off the helmet and sip on some cocktails with this beautiful wife and her kid. Like, come on, man. That seems like a pretty good deal. But
he thinks on it, but doesn't.
Yeah, this is our boy Mando. Yeah. He's got bigger fish to fry than just kicking back and relaxing on Sorgan.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a really cool episode. There was kind of a similar episode in the Clone Wars series wherein Anakin and Obi-Wan trained up these puny little alien species to defend themselves.
Okay,
it's
probably an ode to that, honestly.
It's the same exact storyline. And there's also a sequence where like the villagers are with sticks like
practicing
in a line practicing
swings.
Their forms and I feel like it's frame for frame from what the Clone Wars was. It was really funny, and it's just kind of a little wink to the people that watched it, I think, but it was still a good episode. Very good episode, like all of them were. That will take us to episode 5, The Gunslinger. Dave, this is your episode.
This was so B-Toms asked me prior to the podcast what one of my favorite episodes was, and honestly this one stood out to me. I don't think B-Toms had the same love. He did obviously like the episode, but this was
I did like the episode.
This one was, I don't know why I really liked it. I just liked the betrayal in it, the political side of everything.
Okay, so I think the reason I didn't like it is because it was probably my two least favorite characters.
It wasn't
It
wasn't a necessary episode either, really. Like, it just kind of emphasized the fact that they are just being hunted by anybody who is looking for a dime,
So it has episode 5 starts with Mando in a gunfight with, I don't know, some dude that's gonna die very soon. They're just in space, and Mando is being followed by a dude shooting at him from behind. And the dude has the audacity to say, I can take you in warm or I can take you in cold. Mando cuts the engines, like flips the script on him, says, that's my line, and blasts this dude into oblivion. Shout out any anime ever for that one.
Yeah, for real.
But, you know, he has his engine shot out, so he has to go to Mos Eisley, which is one of the few cities that we know about from the movies. Mos Eisley, I believe, is on Tatooine. Yeah, that Tatooine.
One of the famous Star Wars
planets. Yeah, that's where Luke, Obi-Wan, and Han are in the cantina. Is that the word for it? Cantina.
But he comes across a young man by the name of Toro.
But before that, he meets the mechanic or whatever.
She's important, I think.
You think she's important?
I think she'll come back at least.
I hated her. I think she was all right. I think she was the forced, like nostalgic, cheesy character that was just too much for me.
She was a representation of the audience and how the audience felt of like Baby Yoda, because like, she wasn't like a mother figure, but like once she got her hands on Baby Yoda, she became a mother almost. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't a fan of her, but I mean, she's still alive. She's a mechanic. I think that's just going to be a huge role for Mando in the next season. So I think we'll see
Now that we don't have Queel anymore.
Yeah, we don't have Queel. Yeah.
Another thing we haven't even said, Mando does not fuck with droids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's, and she has her little like three worker droids, and he says, don't let them near my ship. They can't work on it. It's all got to be you. She says it'll take a lot longer, but he does not fuck with droids. So your boy, Dave's favorite character, Toro. What's his last name? Catican?
Toro.
Calican or something.
Calican.
I have him in my notes as Loser McGee because Toro Calican. Yeah.
He ended up being a Loser McGee for sure.
Yeah. So Toro, we find out, I wanted to like him in the beginning too. He seemed like a hot shot, like kind of like Han Solo vibes, you know. But
he reminded me of who's the guy from Marvel's Peter Quill. Yeah.
Quint?
Peter Quill.
I think it's Quill. Yeah, Star-Lord.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I was like Stargazer. I was like thinking Stargazer. Yeah. No, it's not.
Yeah, I can see it.
You kind of remind me of that guy.
But anyway, we find out that he has a hit out for, what's her name?
Fennec Shand.
Fennec Shand, who is this mercenary who was employed by all of the top crime syndicates, including the Hutts, as in Jabba
the Hutt. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mando says, hey, good luck, kid. But if this is the job that gets you into the Bounty Hunters Guild, then this is a shitty job. Nobody wants to go. Yeah, it's a death wish, essentially. And he says, hey man, I know, that's why I need your help. You can have all of the money. I just want kind of the recognition and to get into the guild, but the money's all yours. So Mando is strapped for cash because he needs to pay for his repairs. He agrees to go on this mission and take out Fennec Shand. Honestly, a really, really, really cool sequence where they're on the speeder bikes going through the dunes,
shooting the flares.
Yeah. So they get into, Fennec has a sniper and the high ground, they got shot at, and then they have to hide behind a dune until it gets dark out. Also, I just loved this sequence. It was so cool.
It was a really well done scene, absolutely, with Fennec, you know, manning the sniper, trying to, because we saw that she could hit her shots if given the opportunity, so they had to figure out a way that they could approach her without getting caught. And, you know, they're using their flares. It was just a really brilliant scene overall. And that was honestly one of the reasons why I enjoyed it, is that particular scene. However, you know, after a back and forth, they best Fennec. Toro is in charge of essentially watching her while Mando goes back, because now their bikes are fucked up, right?
So they have
one bike.
They have two bikes for, how did the bike get fucked up? Because I think you're right.
I think she might have just hit one of the shots and like it fucked up.
Point being, they have to go back for the blurg, which is kind of like, it doesn't look like a horse, but they can ride it.
Yeah, you know, they can ride something.
It's this two-legged monster that they can ride. They're kind of cool. I fuck with the blurgs.
But during that time, while Mando is out getting the blurg or whatever it's called, Fennec, as she's tied up, kind of starts to talk Toro into getting the baby for himself. And why kill me? If you grab that baby and bring it back to the Empire, you will be more famous than if you kill me, essentially.
Yeah, she's being very manipulative. And not even the baby. I'm not sure if Fennec knows about the baby, but definitely the Mandalorian.
I
think she puts two and two together and says there's a huge hit out on the Mandalorian. Like, did you see him with an asset or something like that? Because I think everybody knows the Mandalorian has something important. And Toro has seen the kid before. So he's like, wow, I can have the Mandalorian and the kid and get a much bigger reward and recognition. So yeah.
But and then Toro ends up shooting Shand, which I thought was crazy. I thought that was a nice little
Yeah, that was a curveball.
Yeah,
for
it
sure.
was a curveball. And eventually Toro goes back to the ship where Baby Yoda is.
Yeah.
Him and Mando have basically a shootout and just doesn't end well for Toro's a new guy going against a Mandalorian. Like we knew how this was going
to
end.
Mando is such a badass. Just like, yeah, he has a gun to Baby Yoda's head. First off, strike one, buddy.
Yeah.
You do not mess with Baby Yoda. Mando takes care of business and, you know,
just pops.
We're on our way. So that's episode 5. Episode 6 is another good one. It's called The Prisoner, and we find the Mandalorian seeking out an old friend, and I say that with quotes, a quote-unquote old friend named Ran. It was kind of someone he used to run with back in the day, used to have jobs for him. You know, that's all we really know about him. But he says he has a 5-man job for him to retrieve a prisoner from a New Republic prison ship that's manned by droids. So on the surface, it seems like a pretty simple mission, but there's a lot more to it. But this is where we get introduced to a couple more side characters. Some wind up dying. Ran winds up dying eventually. But the other people that are going to be on this mission are Mayfeld, played by Bill Burr. I really liked Mayfeld, and I love Bill Burr. Yeah. Like, we all love Bill Burr. We're so like,
we love Bill Burr.
We like Mayfeld, and I'm hoping to see more of him. An alien chick named Shion. And an alien guy named Berg who just looks like a red devil.
Yeah.
He's the muscle.
Yep.
Kind of cool, like, you know, quirky characters, very Star Wars, but I kind of like the squad and a droid named Zero. I'm sorry, but he doesn't make it either because Mando doesn't fuck with droids. And they go on this whole mission. Very cool sequence. Like, this episode probably doesn't have a whole lot to do with the overarching story, but I was still engaged the whole time. Very cool sequences. And you know, it was a lot of fun this episode.
Yeah.
But they go to the New Republic prison ship. They break out the prisoner, who is revealed to be this guy, Quinn, who also has some history with the Mandalorian. It's alluded to that back in the day, Mando left him to die, and that's why he's now on this prison ship. Long story short, Berg pushes him into the prison shell, and they do the kind of switcheroo. And it doesn't work out for them the way that they want it to, because our boy Mando busts himself out using like a, you know, severed droid arm, gets himself out of the cell and hunts them down one by one, ending with Quinn, who he decides to bring back as a prisoner to Ran. But he kind of fucks them because he plants a Republic like tracker chip or something?
Yeah, it's tracker.
Yeah. So on the prison ship, they run into one human that's just there running the show, who has this, it's almost like a Buster Call, honestly.
Yeah.
From One Piece. Yeah. It's a button he can press to essentially tell the Republic,
everyone.
Call everyone and blow up whatever's here.
One
that's
piece
exactly
references.
What it is. It's a Buster Call. That is exactly what it is. So that's how Ran and Quinn die. Mm-hmm. However, Mando leaves the rest of the crew alive. And I think it was cool because his choice of words was they all got what they deserve. And he didn't kill them.
Yeah.
So they're all prisoners now. We get confirmation of that. And that's why I think we're going to see them.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to see that, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And the end of chapter 6 will bring us to, I've been calling them episodes. They're actually chapters. So yeah. The end of chapter 6 will bring us to chapter 7, titled The Reckoning, which starts out with Mando getting a transmission from Grief, who, like I said, Mando believed Grief to be dead. But Grief is essentially saying that the Imperial presence on Nevarro has drastically increased since you left with Baby Yoda. Like, the Empire is just here and they're not really going away. He essentially tells Mando, if you come help us out, we take out the client, the Empire leaves Nevarro, and I will wipe your slate clean with the guild. Nobody else will be after you. It's a win-win. Mm-hmm. And that kind of draws Mando in. But our boy can't go in without covering his back. So he rallies the troops. He goes back, gets Cara Dune, who is hesitant at first. But then once she finds out that they're going to be fighting Empire, she's like, all right, I'm all in.
Sign me up.
And our homie Queel, He's the man. What else can you say?
So it's those four, right? It's Mando, Kara, Greef, and Quill.
And IG-11.
And IG-11.
Who, noteworthy enough, Quill has reprogrammed to be a nurse droid, like a protector, rather than a bounty hunter droid.
They also want to use him to help come up with a plan to throw the Imperials off Baby Yoda's scent. Essentially, you know, they'll turn in Baby Yoda's pram, like the floating device that he sits in, to the client while Quill actually takes the kid and himself to safety. But yeah, they need IG-11. After seeing him kick ass in episode two or whatever it was, they know how useful he can be.
Mando still doesn't want to bring him, but Quill insists.
Doesn't want to.
Yeah, Quill says, you got to, you know, if you trust me, then you trust my handiwork. I reprogrammed him. It's going to be fine. I don't go if the robot doesn't go. So Mando reluctantly agrees to bring IG-11 in. So the original plan, Mando rendezvous with Greef, and Greef kind of has his own security detail with him, and they meet in a remote location. And it's revealed that the original plan was for Greef and his two bounty hunters to turn on Mando, kill him, and take Baby Yoda for his own. But before that can happen, Greef is mortally wounded and saved by Baby Yoda's force power.
Yep.
So that makes Greef kind of sympathetic.
Puts him in the exact same position as the Mandalorian was.
Exactly. Wanted
to get Baby Yoda for the prize, but eventually found love in him.
So the plan changes. It is now, again, Greef, Mando, Cara Dune, Quill, IG-11, and Baby Yoda. The plan is now going to be Greef and Cara are going to bring Mando to the client in the Navarro town as if he was their prisoner. They caught him, and also give them a gift wrapped Baby Yoda, who will not actually be there. Yeah. Quill is instructed to bring Baby Yoda back to the ship. What they're going to bring is the little stroller.
Yeah,
we can call
floating,
it
the it's floating stroller.
That thing's dope, honestly. It just kind of follows them. But the floating stroller, they're going to leave it closed so that they don't know Baby Yoda's not there, and it's going to be great.
Real quick shout out to Dragon Ball Z, because it reminds me of Frieza's little capsule that he rides around
for sure. So we get into Navarro, and Greef kind of told them that there were only going to be four stormtroopers there tops. When we start getting into the town, we see that there's dozens.
Yeah, like, there is not
literally 50 minimum. And Mando and Cara Dune are just looking at each other like, what is the deal here?
Yeah.
You just lied to our faces. But anyway, yeah, they're starting to sweat because they're starting to understand what's really going on here. Regardless, they follow through with the plan and they go in to meet the client in kind of the bar, the cantina, I guess you would call it.
I think, yeah, this one, it wasn't the cantina, but it was a, just a little bar, I guess, or whatever.
And we have this little back and forth. It seems like the client is taking the bait.
Yeah. As of how the plan's going, it's working out well. When does it turn to shit? Like, how does it turn to shit? I don't even remember.
So it's when we get the call from Moff.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Right.
And this is our introduction to the character Moff Gideon. Well, actually, the client starts to press them and say, I want to see the child, like, open up the care, you know, the little stroller thing. And right before he can finally, like, get privy to their plan, he's interrupted by a transmission and he says, you know, excuse me, I have to take this. And we get the introduction to Moff Gideon, who is our big bad as of right now.
He's an Imperial warlord. So, and I think Mando doesn't know of him all yet at this point in time, right? Like, he's not like, oh, that name sounds familiar, right? I don't think so.
He didn't hear the transmission. He takes it in private. Mando would have recognized the name. I think they all would have. I think he's a pretty well-known guy. He's pretty higher up in the Empire.
But yeah, Gideon recommends that the client double check the kid's whereabouts.
Yeah.
And then the plan, that's when it becomes a huge shootout between the 50 Imperials there.
The client says, don't worry, the baby's here sleeping. And Moff just says, I would double check, cuts the transmission. Yep. The client gets blasted and the entire bar is completely under siege by stormtroopers blasting them. I love referring to it as blasting. I feel like a droid. Blast them. Roger, baby. So they have our boys pinned down, our boys and girl pinned down. There are six I don't know what you would call it, like super troopers, like the black troopers.
Yeah, super troopers.
Whenever you see it, whenever you see a trooper that is not white. All white, it means they're a higher up ranking person. It's pretty obvious, but I think all
black
the different
ones, red ones. Yeah.
So the red one is the flame trooper, which is pretty cool. Mm. Yeah. I also like the speeder bike guys. Yeah, there are different classes of stormtroopers.
It's basically like a Navy, you know, mm-hmm. an army and a, like a Marines.
And I think I remember Mayfeld was a former Empire personnel, and when he's doing his introduction, Mando calls him out for just being a stormtrooper. He's like, no, I was not just a stormtrooper, like, believe that I was one of the higher ups.
He's probably rocking some black or some red.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But so they're all pinned down in the bar, and there are two troopers that are on speeder bikes that kind of intercept Mando's comm to Queel, telling him, Queel, it's a trap. They have us pinned down. Like, get the kid back to safety as soon as possible. Get in the ship and just dip. So we see these cuts to Queel kind of like mushing his blurg on, trying to get back to the ship as soon as possible. But the troopers on speeders intercept the comms, and a speeder is faster than a blurg. And unfortunately,
they managed to get to Queel, and
just in time. He is so close to the Razor Crest, which is the name of the ship, by the way, the Razor Crest, which is a pretty cool ship.
Badass name, Razor Crest.
And they kill Queel.
I was so upset, because I really thought Queel was going to be, you know, in it for the long haul, be so one of the boys, you know, kind of be the canary as the
canary.
Yeah, the canary to the Mando, you know.
Wow, bringing it.
I was trying to
circle.
Think of it. I was just like the boys. I was trying to remember what Huey was, but it was the canary. I thought he was going to be, you know, that kind of character, but
I sad. Like that Disney had the balls to take him out early.
Yep.
Yeah, I hated it, but I'm glad that I hated it that much. You know what I mean? It was a good satisfying death. What
deaths
I thought
are
was
always
gonna,
sad, but
I thought that IG-11 was going to come out right then and there and take out the troopers, but unfortunately he didn't. Queel's now dead, and the troopers retrieve Baby Yoda and seemingly are bringing him back to Navarro. Well, Navarro's the planet, but the town on Navarro. Mm-hmm. And to end the episode, we have a TIE fighter touchdown right in front of the bar in the little, what would you call it? The bazaar. I guess. Lands right there. The TIE fighter, by the way, looks spectacular. And Moff Gideon in the flesh arrives and emerges from the TIE fighter. Dope entrance for any character.
What's the name of that actor? He's obviously in The Boys. He's Breaking Bad.
I don't want to say the wrong thing. I think it's...
But I love him. He plays a great villain in all of... And everything we've seen him in, he's been a phenomenal actor.
Giancarlo Esposito. He's very well known. He plays Gus from Breaking Bad. He is... Stan Edgar and The Boys. And now he's Moff Gideon. Yes, he's a very good head villain. I would trust him to play any villain in any show, movie,
and he'll kill it, as always.
Yeah, absolutely. Damn, I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, he's everywhere, man.
Yeah, he's great. So that's him. That's our introduction to Moff Gideon. He is our big bad, and he looks the part, honestly. He's an intimidating presence. You don't want to mess with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks. Queel's dead. Okay. But yeah, and they scoop Baby Yoda. That's the end of episode 7, which sets us up for a awesome chapter 8.
Hell of an episode 8. This is when we get, you know, IG-11 in action, some more of him in action.
Whenever he's in action, I just love how his arms rotate around his body. He's just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But chapter 8 starts with the two, the two troopers on speeder bikes arriving at a checkpoint just outside of the town, and they're coming in and saying, hey, are we clear to bring the asset to Moff Gideon? And the guy on the transmission says, yeah, you're clear, but you might want to wait a little bit. Moff Gideon just took out an entire platoon of stormtroopers. You know, they ask him again, hey, are we good to go? He said, I wouldn't. He just took out an officer for interrupting him. So Moff Gideon's just taking people out to assert his dominance, if you will. And these two troopers are kind of funny.
They were having a funny back and forth.
They're shooting the shit, but they make the grave mistake of hitting Baby Yoda an actual punch.
Yep, they fuck.
And I thought it was just the one guy that does it, but then the other guy like starts kind of poking him. It's the one guy just wants to see Baby Yoda the whole time.
He was trying
the other
to defend
like, no.
Baby Yoda, and then they eventually...
Baby Yoda bit him, and then he punches him. And right after that, IG-11 strolls up and I'm like, thank God.
I did not want to see Baby Yoda take a beating right there.
Yeah. So IG-11 shows up and says that he is Baby Yoda's nurse droid. And the two troopers are like, what? IG-11s are usually always hunter droids. What are you doing? He's like, well, not me. I'm a nurse droid. And he proceeds to kick their asses to protect Baby Yoda. He like snaps the dude's wrist. He's awesome. He definitely breaks one of the speeders because I think he like body slams someone onto it.
Yeah. Yep.
It's awesome. But he secures the bag, takes Baby Yoda in tow back to the Razor Crest, seemingly back to the Razor Crest. Mm-hmm. That's where I thought he was going, at least.
Thought so, too. But he eventually makes his way to the underground society of, right, the where the Mandalorian clan is.
No. He goes right into town. But we have that's an awesome scene of him being into town, but we'll get there. So then we go. So much happens this episode.
Was this an hour episode or was it still another 30 minutes? I think it was 40. It was like 45.
They're all
it was
like a hard 45 minutes.
Yeah, the last one was a little bit longer.
These couple are like an even 50 minutes of stuff. While the homies are trying to figure out a way into the sewers to get to the Mandalorian covert, the stormtroopers are outside assembling a weapon called an E-Web heavy repeating blaster. And this is just a massive turret that would ruin their day if it got put together and fired on them. At which point we have Moff Gideon addressing the people in the bar. He says, I'm sure the Republican shock trooper Kara Cynthia Dune of Alderaan will advise you that she has witnessed many of her ranks vaporized mid-descent facing the predecessor of this particular model, referring to the E-Web turret. And that's interesting because Alderaan is the home planet of another famous Star Wars figure. Who is that figure?
Was it Luke? No.
Princess Leia, from Alderaan.
Leia from Alderaan.
Princess Leia from Alderaan, And at this point, Alderaan has already been blown up. So I would assume Alderaanians are pretty rare.
Yeah.
I didn't even put that together. Yeah, if she's from Alderaan, she's super rare.
Yeah, because I'm sure the that last whole left. Race yeah. Yeah, is gone.
100%. Then we have Moff Gideon talking to the Mandalorian. He says, or perhaps the decommissioned Mandalorian hunter Din Djarin has heard the songs of the Siege of Mandalore when gunships outfitted with similar ordnance laid waste to fields of Mandalorian recruits in the Night of 1,000 Tears. And that's a lot of information.
And that I think refers to the night that then the reason why the Mandalorian has such issues with droids, as we eventually get to, is that the night that he was accepted into the Mandalorian club, basically, he was his whole family, his name, like his whole village was destroyed by droids, Imperial droids, I think.
So we actually literally get the flashback right after this scene. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly that. His unnamed home planet is under siege by their Clone Wars era droids. We have the B2 super battle droids. Are those
the silver figures
that kind of they looked really, really cool.
They were the big bulky things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're pretty iconic in the Star Wars universe.
I remember that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Mando essentially tells the other, you know, I wasn't born on Mandalore. Mandalorian isn't a race. It's a creed. So you don't have to be born on Mandalore to be a Mandalorian. And it's his backstory. And this flashback that we get is his planet's under siege. His parents are kind of carrying him and they hide him in the cellar where he is found by one of the droids. And before he can get shot down by the droid, he is saved by a Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. And we see the Mandalorians descending on their jetpacks and kind of saving his hometown from the droid presence. But he is left an orphan and what is referred to as a foundling. And what a foundling is essentially when you are orphaned, you are a foundling. If you are found by the Mandalorians, they are dictated by their creed to take care of you until you come of age or you are returned to your species.
Was it
people.
An option? I didn't know it was not. Like, if you were an orphan, like, did you have to become a Mandalorian? Like, could you have just left at any point in time, like once you felt like you could leave? Or I guess they would just have nowhere to go, really.
They would have nowhere to go. I'm not sure if you have to become a Mandalorian. It's more if you are the Mandalorian that found the foundling, you are responsible for it. Whether or not
they follow in your footsteps or not.
With regards to Baby Yoda specifically, we have a conversation later in this episode between Mando and the covert leader chick, where he says, what am I supposed to do with it? Where am I going with this? oh, yes. He asked, you think I'm supposed to train this thing? And she says, no, it's too young and weak. So maybe it's the expectation that you would train it to be a Mandalorian. I don't know. But their creed is you got to take care of it until it comes of age. Or, and if you're taking care of it for years, you're going to train it to be a Mandalorian.
Right. You know obviously, what I mean? You're not going to have many jobs. Mm-hmm. That's a particular skill set that is only viable for the Mandalorians.
Yeah. So that's Mando's flashback. We get confirmation of his backstory and we find out that his name is Din Djarin. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of info. Then what else do we we see Moff Gideon addressing now finally Greef. He says, I advise disgraced magistrate Greef Karga to search the wisdom of his years and urge you to lay down your arms and come outside. So he's just saying, be smart, come outside. Mm-hmm. He continues to talk to them and say, I offer reasonable negotiation and I understand you have no reason to trust me. You can't trust me. The insurance I will give you is this. I will act in my own self-interest, which at this time involves your cooperation and benefit. I will give you until nightfall. Then the E-Web opens fire.
He is such a way with words, man.
So good. And he kind of chills right now. He kind of has that cadence that Stan Edgar has too, where he talks like, and if you remember, sir, like he kills it.
He's very belittling to whoever he's talking to because just in all these positions that he plays, he has all the information he needs on everyone. So he can learn to play everyone like chess pieces, essentially.
My man's got a thesaurus in his back pocket or something. He just comes up with the best words to say stuff. Wow, that's a hell of a sentence. I'm talking him up and the sentence that just came out of my
opposite way.
Comes up with the best words to say stuff. Wow. The Mandalorian people bringing out the best in us. Anyway, where am I going though?
IG-11, doesn't he save the day? They're all pinned down. Gideon was doing his speech about giving them.
Okay. No, so IG-11. Yes, this is where this comes in. IG-11 is talking to Mando on, I guess it was Queel's comm system, and tells him that Queel is dead and he is fulfilling his base function to be a nurse and protect Baby Yoda.
Hell yeah.
Which cuts to him on the speeder bike, just blades of glory charging into this town, and he takes out everything in his wake. This thing is a machine.
I was telling B-Toms, I really like the scene when, you know, they get into the town, they're getting fired at, he grabs Baby Yoda, flips into the backside, his body then proceeds to turn back around to the front and just starts popping people left and right. I love that scene.
So it's pretty cool. He causes havoc and kind of, you know, it turns into a gunfight. Kara, Mando, and Greef use that distraction to get themselves out of the bar and kind of give themselves a fighting chance. And it's kind of just this open firing between the stormtroopers and the Empire and, you know, our heroes, for lack of a better term. All the while, Baby Yoda is in tow. Like, he is just kind of in IG-11's arms during all of this.
He has no idea what's going on.
The ending of this is Mando takes control of the E-Web turret and starts kind of shooting everybody. Moff shoots at, I guess, the battery, like the power source for this turret. A huge explosion, and Mando gets pretty injured. He takes a lick. Kara comes out and drags him back into the bar where they all kind of... They're back in the bar.
Yeah, they're just pinned down.
In a worse situation than they were because Mando can't move.
IG-11 is offering to, you know, provide support. He's saying, you got to take off your helmet. I need to treat you, because I think he has a pretty severe head injury at this point in time. And Mando, to this point, is still like, no, I can't do that.
He tells them to leave him to die. It's like we were saying, most Mandalorians choose to die before they would choose to take off their helmet. And that's the decision he's trying to make here. Because
However,
he finally gets Kara to leave and says, take the child, make sure it's safe. And IG-11 says, I will stay with the Mandalorian.
And
they leave.
Yep.
And IG-11 starts to say, I can treat your wounds, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And Mando pulls a gun and says, you touch my helmet, like, I'll kill you. No living thing has ever seen my face. And IG-11 hits him with a, well, I'm not a living thing.
A droid is no such thing.
Yeah.
So he gives in and is allowed. IG-11 is the first
thing
to see who Mandalorian looks, what Mandalorian looks like.
It's pretty cool.
It's a touching moment too, because this really pulls, you know, this is character development right here. Yeah. Mandalorian had always hated droids. We had seen that for seven and a half episodes. And here we are. He finally recognizes IG-11 as a good guy, allows him to do the one most secretive thing that he's not allowed to do. Yeah. So it's just character development right there.
And before this happens, we get another Baby Yoda Force moment where the flame trooper kind of enters the bar and starts, torching it. But he has an open shot on the group. They would just be screwed. And Baby Yoda bails him out with the Force and kind of literally stops the flamethrower mid throwing flames. And it's awesome. They do a really good job of depicting the Force. And I think there are some powers that Baby Yoda does that we didn't really see in the older movies. Like, I don't remember the Force being able to heal people. Mm-mm. Like, that wasn't a thing we saw from a lot of Jedi.
That might be just their species thing. Who obviously knows at this point in time. But yeah, that was a nice, I think that was a cool power to add in for Baby Yoda to have.
Yeah, definitely. And as we know, the Force works in mysterious ways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything's fair game.
This could be another layer to the Force.
So IG-11 heals up our boy Mando, takes off his helmet. You know, it's a great scene. And they catch up with Kara, Grief, and Baby Yoda, who are making their way through the sewers and the Mandalorian covert. What they're doing is looking for help from the Mandalorians because they would obviously be sympathetic to Mando and what they have going on here. Mm-hmm. As they're making their way through the sewer, they stumble across a pile of Mandalorian helmets and armor, and Mando knows what that means. He assumes the worst and thinks all the Mandalorians are dead. The Empire found them, yada, yada, yada. He starts to blame Grief and says, was this you? Was this retribution by the guild? And then we see our head chick from the Mandalorian covert come out and say, no, they took off their helmets willingly. Like it was time to go. Mm-hmm. And she is just here salvaging the remains because she's like the metal worker, and she's just
doing an honorable thing for herself and her clan, basically just kind of breaking down all. Is it Beskar? I'm guessing. She's just melding it down, basically.
Well, I think that probably not all of it is Beskar because it's very rare, and they wear like other armor, but she's probably salvaging the Beskar she can find from that. Mm-hmm. She is a very, very loyal Mandalorian, it seems like, and seems to be kind of like the keeper of their traditions, or at least with regards to this covert. Mm-hmm. So, and she knows the importance of that position, which is why she tells
them doesn't want the heritage to end out. She wants it to keep going. That's what she was doing even in the beginning of the series when we saw her.
And Mando invites her to come with them several times, and she says, no, like my place is here, this, that, and the other thing. It's honorable is what it is. I like this chick, and I think we're going to see her again because I think Mando has a lot of respect for her.
Yeah, and she was kicking some stormtrooper butt, man, in those series. Yeah, definitely. That was a good scene for her. Absolutely.
So before we move on to the IG-11 rips in the chat scene, there's some dialogue that I thought was important that the covert leader says. Mando shows her Baby Yoda because she asks, well, what is the asset that's causing all this trouble? Sees Baby Yoda, and Mando says, you know, it's special. His species can move things with his mind. And she says, oh, I'm familiar with such powers. The songs of eons past tell of battles between Mandalore the Great and an order of sorcerers called Jedi that fought with such powers, the Force. Its kind was the enemy, but this one in particular is not. It's a foundling. By creed, it is in your care. You have no choice but to reunite it with its own kind. To which Mando says, you expect me to search the galaxy for the home of this creature and deliver it to a race of enemy sorcerers. And she says, this is the way. I love that, man. That's just kind of like the be all end all. This is the way.
It's a cherry on top.
Mm-hmm. And then she says what I already said, by creed, until the foundling comes of age or is reunited with its kind, you are as its father. This is the way. She gifts him his signet, which I guess is a Mandalorian thing. You know, you had to earn it, but it's kind of just a decoration that they put on their shoulder plates. It's called a signet, and his is of the Mudhorn.
It might be just like a coming of age thing. Okay, you've reached the point of you're finally done your training kind of thing.
For sure. And it was cool that he got it, though. And of course, it's going to be the Mudhorn. And she says, now you are a clan of two. It makes sense. Perfect. It's pretty cool.
It was awesome.
But Another huge thing, she says, have you been trained in the Rising Phoenix? And he says, yes, as a boy. And she says, well, here you go, dude. Now you got a jetpack. Yep. Which earlier Mando said, I got to get me one of those.
Yeah.
So glad he has a jetpack. And
here we are.
Boy, does he know how to use it. So we got the covert leader chick whooping some stormtrooper ass, which leads us to believe that she is still alive and well. And hopefully we see her in season two. Our heroes kind of reconvene at a lava river, and they get on this boat, and this is where we get our IG-11 rips in the chat scene.
Yep. Just finally, he self-destructs just to give his friends their only way out, essentially, yeah, from the Imperial trap. And it was sad to see. I mean, it was kind of, I guess it was kind of foreseeable almost at this point, because someone had to make a sacrifice for them to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And IG-11 was the only one capable of that. But a very good scene, you know, very touching for just a droid, yeah, you know.
Well, and it was character development, because Mando is the one that's really saying, no, you can't do this. You can't leave us,
yeah,
like this.
Exactly.
We need you to fight. And IG-11 IG-11 says, I can tell you're sad. He's like, I'm not sad. He's like, I analyze your voice. You are sad. Like, I could tell. And then he steps out of the boat, which also he looked really cool just walking through the lava. Mm-hmm. And goes to the end of the tunnel and self-destructs all the stormtroopers that were waiting to ambush them, giving them safe passage, and seemingly a clear route at an escape. But it's not that easy, because we have our friend Moff Gideon flying over in his TIE fighter, and they do not have the firepower to handle it. So they're kind of pinned down. They don't really have anywhere to go.
However, Mando activating that jetpack, baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's the only way to keep up with Gideon's TIE fighter.
Yeah, pretty impressive display for someone who hasn't used a jetpack in a very long time.
That was probably my one, I think, at least from what I remember, it was probably my only issue. Yeah. It was just like, okay, he said he didn't know how to use it. And now
he did say he was trained as a kid, though. So, like, he knows up and down, probably. You know what I mean?
Regardless, it was still a very well done sky battle, if you want to say that.
Yeah.
So he put all of his skills to the test. He earned all of his Beskar, and he plants explosives on the ship.
Yeah.
Right?
So the way that he takes down the TIE fighter is he jetpacks up, he grappling hooks onto it. So he's kind of just being carried along, and then he reels in the grappling hook and puts sticky bombs on the wing. And then he just kind of like dips off, and the wing explodes, and there's
Gideon is seemingly killed in the process.
Yeah, there was no explosion.
There was no way.
I saw it hit the ground, and it was just a cloud of dirt.
Yeah.
There was no explosion. There was no way they were taking
I thought the
Moff.
Same thing, too.
Mm-hmm. Very obvious, but like at the same time, Moff was not going to be taken out that quick.
And this was the part of the series that really is going to carry it through the next few seasons. Like, we have a story with Mandalorian trying to return Baby Yoda to his home. We have that whole story, but this adds another dimension, another layer to the whole story, because we see Moff Gideon use some kind of weapon to just open up a hole in the TIE fighter that is now crashed.
Well, we can refer to it as what it is. It's the
Darksaber, baby.
Yeah, yeah, and it is. And it's like the most badass weapon in the
Star
Wars universe.
Should I get into that right now, or should we wait till after?
We only have one more scene to like bring us full circle.
So we'll do this, and then I'll get into my small Darksaber rant on what it is.
So where our characters are ending season one, Moff Gideon is with the Darksaber emerging from this TIE fighter, and now has a chip on his shoulder and is anti-Mando, obviously. So that's going to be our big bad going forward. And we have Grief and Kara and Mando all just kind of saying what their plans are. Grief says, now that Nevarro is safe from the Empire's rule, like, you guys should stay here and help me. You'd be welcome back into the guild with open arms, and you would have your first pick of any mission you want. Kara takes him up on that deal and says, yeah, I'll chill on Nevarro for a little bit. I'm not doing anything. But Mando denies the opportunity to return to the guild because he has more pressing issues.
He's listening to the armor smith's final words. Mm-hmm. You know, deliver the child back to his home planet.
Yep. So Baby Yoda and Mando are on the Razor Crest, and they're just going through the galaxy. We don't know. I don't even know where I would start finding the Jedi or the species.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a tall order for Mando. We also see that Baby Yoda is wearing the Mythosaur necklace, which is it's just a big Mandalorian thing. That's like the Valar Morghulis chip in Game of Thrones. It's he gave Cara Dune the necklace when he thought he was going to die and said, give this to the Mandalorian covert, like they'll take care of you with this. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of like it's a Mandalorian thing, but you know, he says, oh, Baby Yoda, I didn't think I was ever going to see this again, but why don't you hang on to it? So mm-hmm. Now Baby Yoda has the Mythosaur necklace, which I think is really, really cool. The Mythosaur is just like a Mandalorian lore thing. They were these huge, huge flying beasts that the Mandalorians of old kind of like tamed and fought against, mm-hmm. and I think slaughtered, yeah. Kind of akin to what the Fire Nation did to the dragons in Avatar. No spoilers, but spoilers.
Spoilers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's it. That's it for season one.
That's Mando.
Recap. Yeah, it was season one was phenomenal. It felt like, you know, the time for it felt fast. I mean, season two is already here. So I'm excited to see where it goes. We'll get into the expectations. Let me get into the Darksaber real quick. And then we'll go into expectations for season two. So what we know of the Darksaber right now, it was first seen in the Clone Wars. It was Mandalorian made. It was actually created by a man named, I think his name is Ter Vizsla. And he was actually the first Mandalorian to become a Jedi. Now, I think he was a wielder of this Darksaber for a while. I think he had either passed away or something happened to him. And then the Jedi Temple had taken the Darksaber as an ode to him. However, his family felt like it belonged to them, like the Mandalorians. It was, I think they were called House Vizsla. They basically steal the Darksaber from the Jedi Temple. It goes through a bunch of different hands at this point in time. Like Darth Maul eventually steals it from House Vizsla. Essentially, he uses it to trains some other people with it.
Oh, Maul takes it?
Yeah, Maul That's takes it cool. for a little bit. Yeah, because yeah. he actually really, I think he states that he is really into it. It's actually he says it's like a heavy but powerful sword that he wanted to add to his collection, essentially. Yeah.
It's crafted different. It has a very unique look. I should have done my research there. It's made more unique than any other lightsaber we've ever seen. It's like the coolest lightsaber too. It's I would cool, say that yeah. and Mace Windu's purple one yep. are the two coolest lightsabers we can see.
That's not even up for debate either. Mm.
But the big thing about this is that, like Dave was saying, it's the whole thing with this Darksaber is it's more than a weapon. It's a symbol of kind of the ruler of Mandalore.
I have a quote.
And the Mandalorian people. Go ahead.
It's just a short quote. It's just, it is used to unify the people and strike down those that oppose them, essentially referring to the Mandalorian people who it's just, yeah, exactly what you were saying. It's a symbol of power for them. Anyone who opposes them will get struck down with the Darksaber. Mm-hmm. So essentially whoever is the owner of the Darksaber is reigns over Mandalore. So right now Moff Gideon is seemingly that character right now. He has control, well, should have control of the Mandalorians.
Yes. So for those of you that do watch the animated series, the last time that we saw the Darksaber was in the hands of Bo-Katan Kryze. Bo-Katan Kryze, we're going to call her. I don't know. She's known as Bo-Katan, though. Mm-hmm. And in Star Wars Rebels, which was not the Clone Wars animated series, but the other animated series, the Darksaber is given to Bo-Katan by Sabine Wren, because Sabine identifies Bo-Katan as the most likely leader of Mandalore, the most deserving mm-hmm. leader of Mandalore. Mandalore, since being taken over by the Empire, has kind of been in shambles. It's kind of just been a lawless place where dueling factions struggle for power. Bo-Katan was kind of a unifying leader, or at least was set up to be someone who had the best interests of the Mandalorian people at heart. So that was a good person to have the Darksaber, mm-hmm. but somewhere between the events of Star Wars Rebels, which for context was right at the beginning of the rebellion, so maybe a couple years before the events of Episode 4, somewhere between then and now, the Darksaber has fallen into the clutches of Moff Gideon. Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we get some of the answers in Season mm-hmm. 2. So I guess now we can talk about the season two trailer. If you remember it, the only things I really picked up on the official season two trailer was that Mando is going to deliver Baby Yoda to his home. We saw a glimpse of some of the Imperials that were fighting. They were actually not, they had clean, you know, suits. I don't know if you picked up on that. So I don't know mm-hmm. if we're going to be closer to a more unified Empire at this point in time.
I think the closer we get to Moff Gideon, the more resources and organization we're going to have in the Empire's forces. I think some of these higher up warlords still do have more or less the resources of what they had with the Empire. Well, not more or less, because the Empire's in fractions, but the bigger warlords have more resources. And yes, I would expect they have armor cleaner.
And the only other thing I saw that was worth noting was we get a pretty cool scene of, like, I guess it's like a boxing ring almost, but there's just like two different like races or species of like creatures that are just going at it. And it's like a brief cutaway. You hear like some missiles firing and then it's just the Mandalorian, you know, wailing ass on some people. Yeah. So
I'm ashamed to say that I have not seen the preview because I do not like really, having things given away.
It was only a minute 30. You didn't miss much. And yeah, I don't blame you for seeing it because of the spoiler purposes.
I like to speculate,
but,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it did a good job of not, I wouldn't want to say spoiling anything. It was just like one quick sentence or like a paragraph or something. Yeah. And it just gave you a little brief snippet of things to come. But what are some of your expectations for season two? Like, do you want any, what kind of answers would you like?
I think season one was a lot of exposition and world building, introducing us to some of the characters that are going to be recurring through the series. What I want in season two is a little bit more substance and a little bit more of an overarching story. I feel like season one was a lot of standalone
episode stories
where there is like that background motivating factor of Baby Yoda. But at the same time, I feel like this is the first time Mandalorian's top priority is getting him back to the Jedi Order or his own species. That's what I want to see. I want to see more interactions with Jedi. Mm-hmm. I want to see.
I'm excited to see, you know, Bo-Katan. We already have confirmation that we have actors for Bo-Katan. Another big name to mention is Ahsoka.
Ahsoka Tano, who is a fan favorite from the Clone Wars. Love it or hate it, I loved the Clone Wars animated series, but Ahsoka Tano was Anakin Skywalker's Padawan.
Yep.
All through the Clone Wars. She obviously was not in the movies, but she is canon, and she was probably the person that Anakin was closest to, bar Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. Anakin and her had a very, very good relationship. She was kind of like a hothead like Anakin was. But it was awesome. And what her whole thing is that she was a Jedi. Like I said, she was Anakin's Padawan, but towards the end of the Clone Wars series, she actually left the Jedi Order. Mm-hmm. So she is now one of those force wielders who is just kind of doing whatever comes to her. And we see her again as a fully grown adult in the Star Wars Rebel series. And she is just a complete badass. She has two dual... Have I showed you her dual lightsabers?
Yeah.
They're dual lightsabers, but they're also bright white.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so cool. So she, we're going to see her in season two, and she's going to be a fully fledged Jedi. She is a no nonsense person. She might be super strong.
She has the potential to be the strongest character in the show.
100%. She beat Darth Maul in one-on-one combat in the final season of the Clone Wars.
Really?
So she's no joke. And that was back when she was
Obi-Wan. That was something Obi-Wan couldn't do.
Obi-Wan could do it. That's something Qui-Gon Jinn couldn't do. Obi-Wan definitely could do it. How dare you, sir?
True. I have to do some research as well, getting into this stuff. But Ahsoka, I'm really excited to see. Bo-Katan as well. I personally would like to see a little bit more of the origins of Baby Yoda. Hopefully we do get to the planet by the end of the season so we can see, or whatever it is, a village, who knows.
I wouldn't hold your breath. I think we would much sooner find Jedi than we are finding that species' home planet. That's like their thing. Nobody knows anything about them.
Yeah, and I think
it's awesome.
I was reading something too. So I told you this at the beginning of the podcast, but so season three has actually already started pre-production. So we are already in confirmation, greenlit for a season three.
I mean,
season four. I saw an article saying that season four is already in like being discussed at this point in time too.
I mean,
which they were saying would be more along the lines for like Baby Yoda, I think is what they were saying.
Yeah.
So we won't be getting that, but maybe hopefully we get some snippets of what that whole thing is, what the difference is between Yoda and the Jedi, like are his healing powers
Force
related, or are they species related, you know? So There's a lot of questions around him.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree. If they do give us information about the species, I would love it. I don't see them doing that because I feel like the whole appeal of this species is that it's a complete mystery. Nobody knows anything about them except that they're super rare, mm-hmm. which I love that kind of ominous, mysterious background to it, but maybe they will.
Do we have any theories? I mean, obviously, I feel like our boy, the Mandalorian,
Din Djarin.
Yeah, I think he will, at the end of the series, should he be the wielder of the Darksaber? Or do you think he's not the kind of person that would accept that kind of responsibility?
You know, I have no clue, actually. That would...
Because I'm just trying to get that. To that theorizing kind of portion of it before we get into the actual watching of season two.
Wow. I want that more than anything else in the world. Baby Yoda wields the Darksaber.
I think Baby Yoda could be in contention now, for it.
Okay. And here's the other thing I want them to explore is Baby Yoda is, as we know, the Force has the light and the dark, the good side of the Force and the bad side of the Force. Or mm-hmm. the, yeah. Baby Yoda has exhibited once a characteristic of the dark side of the Force. He really? Force choked Cara Dune. Do you remember when him and Man or oh, her and Mando yeah. are arm wrestling?
Yeah.
And it's a funny scene yeah. because he doesn't like that she's arm wrestling Mando wow. and he starts to Force choke her. But that just brings us back to this theory. When you are a youngling and you are Force sensitive, you're neutral. You know, you are waiting to be molded by the Force. And the whole thing is the Jedi, if you're accepted into the Jedi Order, they kind of try to sculpt you into, you know, a light reflection of the Force. Mm-hmm. However, as we know, it's very easy to slip up and go to the dark side. So will Baby Yoda be exposed to the dark side? And will we have an evil Baby Yoda?
That would
something
be crazy.
Like that.
Oh, my gosh.
Unfortunately, I think we're just because of the way that he ages.
We're not ever going to get.
We're never going to get him as an adult being able to make those kind of conscious decisions. But like,
it's worth
could you imagine him Force lightning or something?
It's worth bringing up and exploring that realm. Because yeah. I mean, I'm sure this is not going to be the final piece to all of Star Wars. Yeah. You know, like there's going to be another show along the lines. And who knows, maybe we get older Baby Yoda and he's just regular Yoda.
I would say the one thing I need to see is just more interactions with Jedi. I want... It's a very interesting time because nobody knows anything about the Jedi because it's almost 30 years since the Jedi were all executed. Yeah. You know, it's very, very, very uncommon to see any Force wielders anymore because the Jedi Order is not a thing anymore. I don't really think there's many Sith out there either. So, you know, people, even in the final episode, they referred to the Jedi as sorcerers, you know?
Yeah.
They're just... They're
mystical beings. They're
legends
yeah.
now. Yeah. You know, like people don't think that they're real. Mm-hmm. People speculate that they never were a thing. So I want to see interaction with Jedi. That's all I want to see. And we're going to get it because we know Ahsoka is going to be in it, who's going to be played by Rosario Dawson, by yeah. the way. And that's a really good casting.
Great
because
casting.
She kind of like looks like her. Like
she has that look to her.
Yeah. So. But Ahsoka was probably my favorite character in the Clone Wars series. Dave, you have to watch it. I think
this gives me every reason to go and watch it because not only do you love it, my dad has been telling me for years to watch Clone Wars.
Really?
Like, oh my God.
Oh, I
yeah,
didn't know that.
He well, is a big Clone Wars guy.
It's like I said at the beginning, the scope of the Star Wars universe is just that it's an entire galaxy. So there's way more stories and information to tell that they just can't fit into the movies. And what the Clone Wars series is a 7-season show between episodes 2 and 3. So there's just 7 series worth of world building and getting into this Star Wars lore that I literally cannot get enough of. Like I look for any medium of content that I can. I just finished the Star Wars video game that I'll probably give yeah. to you. What was it called? Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah. yeah.
Which I think we could see the main character from that, who is voiced by the redheaded kid from Shameless.
Yeah. I don't know.
What is his name? Oh, unbelievable. Head. But they made the video game character look exactly like him. So... And the
Some
events
tie-in?
Of the, he is like kind of an a teenager... He's like Padawan age. He's about 20 years old in the okay. events of the video game, which is, it lines up chronologically. He would be probably.
That would be so cool if they pulled that together.
Dude, there's so many people that they could bring back into the fold. If you're a fan of Star Wars Rebels, you know, the final episode of that, the protagonist Ezra Miller, who is kind of the whole Star Wars Rebel story is him training to be a kid to a Jedi Knight. And the last episode, I can't really tell you without the context, but we don't know what happened to him. He essentially was on the back of a beast that is capable of hyperspace travel, and
wow,
he just yeeted out of there with the big bad of that series, Admiral Thrawn, who you may know, he has blue skin, like red eyes, and he is not from canon Star Wars stuff. Mm-hmm. He is from the extended universe, which is known as Star Wars Legends.
Right.
And he's a fan favorite. There's a book series that chronicles, it's called the Thrawn Trilogy, and it's essentially three books documenting the events following episode 6, and I haven't read them yet, but he is an amazing bad guy from what I've heard in those, and he's in Star Wars Rebels and he's amazing in that. But him and Ezra Miller, to conclude that series, are just, they're together, but nobody knows where they went.
That's so wild.
So both of them could make their way into this show. I hope they do, because Ezra Miller was on his way to being a very powerful Jedi.
I feel like fan favorites and non-canon stories always eventually find their way in. Mm-hmm. I mean, this another anime reference, but Broly in Dragon Ball Z was not canon. He yeah. just had his own movie, and then now in the new season of Super,
yeah,
he became canon. So if you're a fan favorite, chances are you can sneak your way into the main story.
And that's what, to all the old head fans listening, like I said, Disney is capable of making some very, very, very good Star Wars content. That's what they're doing with this show. The other thing I need to see is a good freaking lightsaber fight, because the new movies did not give us a good lightsaber fight.
Going back to the beginning, they let us down with a lot.
People say the throne room fight was like the best lightsaber fight, and I say it's BS, because that was a lame scene. I thought the throne, because it wasn't even a lightsaber fight. It was them against like guards.
Yeah,
of course they should yeet them. You know,
It wasn't a Jedi versus Jedi battle. It was just two Jedi versus...
And the one Jedi versus Jedi was Rey versus... Oh, my God. What's the bad guy's name?
It was so bad.
Solo, but... Kylo Ren. My goodness.
Oh, I, for some reason, was thinking... I was trying to think of the fucking Sith Lord for some reason.
Oh, Palpatine, Darth Sidious. Yeah, Kylo Ren. We did get them fight, but it was like the lamest lightsaber duel ever.
Yeah,
it was like two whacks and a lot of talking, and it was so lame. So what I need to see is an awesome lightsaber
fight. And I think we're going to, I hope we get one.
Well, it just doesn't make sense, because I know they were able to do it 10 years ago for episodes 1, 2, and 3, and then they just refused to give us another cool one. They have the capabilities to do it. They have the CGI.
Rogue One wasn't really Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new movies kind of didn't do anything.
Although in Rogue One, they gave us that Darth Vader scene.
They did do that.
Give us a
Darth Vader scene.
Hopefully they're taking our feedback and what we liked and didn't like, and they're just going to give us something awesome.
Yep.
We're definitely going to get a lightsaber fight when we have the Obi-Wan series, which is... that's going to be
That'll be a great one. So. Obi-Wan would be... That's one of my personal favorites right there. But I think that covers everything for the recap.
Hopefully we didn't ramble on too long, but I had a lot of fun doing that review, honestly. I think we can both admit that we're not subject matter experts on Star Wars, but hopefully we know enough that you enjoyed this show. And guys, keep an eye out for our continued coverage of The Mandalorian all season long. We're going to be running through season 2 with every episode weekly, so keep an eye out for that. And as always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
May the Force be with you.
This is the way.